Mittagspause.
Hört uns denn jemand nun endlich?
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Stop it.
How will we make it?
What did you see, Clary? What did you see?
I like to remember things my own way.
Remember me.
Reasonably unhinged.
Yes, hello and welcome to another episode of Reasonably Unhinged, and we have a full house today. I'm Heiner.
I'm Jibril.
I'm Noor.
Paul.
And I'm Rami.
Yeah, I don't think we've had this many people in the studio for the show thus far, so I'm really excited to get all your opinions on today's movie, which is One False Move by Carl Franklin. Maybe we'll go around the horn and give our first impressions first. Jibril, what did you think of this movie?
I really liked the movie, especially the writing and the picking of cast, just like their role, especially. I think they were not like the like crazy stars involved in this movie. So like, I really enjoyed it, just like coming from how they were acting, the whole storyline. I really enjoyed it. But the one thing that was hard for me is like to, not the hardest, but like to pick a favorite character, because like most of them are like dark. There's like no good, like nor like bad. Basically, they just have like both sides. And like one character, I say like Dale, no spoilers. I expected them to be like this good guy until like basically I discovered like the whole background of him, and it just like tore me apart. But yeah, but I did like the movie though.
Nice.
About me?
Sure.
Your shoe is working.
It's working.
Because I can't hear anything.
Oh, then you can adjust it.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. For me, the story is okay, but the rhythm is a little bit slow.
Yeah.
I
get it.
Yeah.
That's the gist of it for you.
Even for me, the story is, you know, you can expect all the events.
Yeah, really? Wow.
Yes, that's why it was not that much interesting for me, to be honest.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. So Dale Dixon's arc, or his sort of background, you already saw a deeper darkness in him early on, or a more complex person.
Yeah, you can understand this, but as I said, the rhythm is a little bit slow for me. That's why.
Nice.
Okay, I think the movie was good with some pros and cons. So, yeah.
Okay, do you want to elaborate, or should we go into detail
maybe
later?
Maybe it's too detailed and goes too much into this talk, so let us talk.
Sure, no problem.
I have to say I really enjoyed the movie. I actually liked this like slice of life aspect about, you know, when they came to the
Star City.
Yeah, to Hurricane's playground.
Yes.
Yeah, it was really, I don't know, like you had this like a culture shock, especially for the two police guys from Los Angeles, like how this Dale guy handles all the issues in his little community and whatever, and everybody knows everybody, and they have a barbecue with his family and all of that stuff. I really enjoyed this aspect of the movie, but I also enjoyed the whole, you know, the overarching plot with the three people on the run and everything, and also what you just said, that there's actually like they're all flawed, you know, none of them is like the perfect human being, which is quite realistic, I would say. So Yeah, I enjoyed it. And in the beginning, I thought it was like really amateurish. But I guess it's just like those few actors in the beginning, those people in the first
scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an insane first scene. It's also, yeah, we'll talk about it.
It is. Mm. I didn't like the performance of all of them. Mm-hmm. It was also a little bit, you know, like maybe wooden. But I guess it's only because they've been in one scene only, and that's it. And the rest of the cast, I think, yeah, the only one that I really know was Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah.
Probably because he's quite famous, I guess. And
the other one, the screenplay.
Also, yeah, I was really surprised about that.
Mm.
And the ponytail, the look and everything is just...
It's very Billy Bob Thornton-like.
Yes, with the earring and the... Yeah.
He is that kind of guy. He plays that kind of guy all too well.
But it feels like that is also him, right? I mean... I don't know him personally.
Hopefully not. I think he's a rather nice guy.
Not with the murder and all of that stuff, but you know, like...
this brash.
When you see his relationship with, what was it? Engineer Jolie back in the days, like he was this, you know, wild, rough guy that probably, you know...
at least he stylized himself. Oh yeah, for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah.
They had vials of blood of each other's around their neck.
It was
neck.
Like really, really...
they were the couple in Hollywood that people love to talk about. Yes. They love to have controversy surrounding them back in the day.
Yeah, but I really liked everything else about the movie, like how the scenery and everything, the camera work, the dialogues and everything. It was an interesting watch, and I really enjoy the vibe of these kind of movies, mm-hmm. even though it is like, it is an independent movie. It was a small production.
Kind of. It's certainly a small production. It did get a major release label, so I guess technically it is a studio film in the sense that it did receive a release in a fashion, but it's definitely on the smaller side. Carl Franklin's movies are, in general, in the 90s, there was not that much of a market for this kind of film. But it still was a huge darling with the critics. I want to highlight this one small thing. Back in a little history hour. back in the day, in the 90s, in America, there was this show at the movies, which was an institution. Everyone watched it, or a lot of people watched it, and it was just two critics sitting in a cinema talking about the newest releases and giving their opinions, a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And these thumbs up and thumbs downs actually moved the needle in the movie theaters. So they had a huge influence on what people actually watched. And they both tragically died too young, Siskel and Ebert, they are called. Roger Ebert has, I think, the most staying legacy as one of the biggest film critics of all time. And they basically were at each other's throats all the time, which made the show very entertaining. They both have a very educated knowledge of movies, but they always have these small differences, and they would talk each other into a rage about what was a wrong opinion of the other guy. But what they could both agree on was 1992, when the movie came out, their best of list, so the best 10 movies they had seen that year. We have Siskel's list number one for One False Move, and we have Ebert's list number two, only behind Malcolm X, One False Move. So it was a huge critics darling, but it was a very comparatively small release and viewership numbers. Also, funnily enough, The Player is on both their best of lists. Number two for Siskel and number eight for Ebert, which we've discussed before here on the show. Anyway, back to the now, or back to 92, actually, to One False Move, because let's just start with this explosive beginning, because it is a very bold choice to have perhaps the most disturbing, most violent, and most outrageous scene of the whole film just at the beginning. And it really threw me off course. I don't know how you felt about it. But yeah, in the beginning, we witness several murders. We witness a sort of stick-up, as you've mentioned, Billy Bob Thornton, his character, and
Michael Beach's character, Pluto. They are two criminals who stick up a dealer's house and kill everyone inside in gruesome fashion. Pluto, the accomplice of Billy Bob Thornton, or the partner, however you want to see their relationship. He stabs the people in the room while a camera is still filming what was supposed to be a jubilant affair for them. And they were familiar with our third character in this crime syndicate of theirs, played by Cinder Williams, Fantasia, who sort of is the opening to them getting actually inside of the room, and who I think gave me the biggest sort of disturbance or whiplash, because you could see from the very moment they entered the room, Billy Bob Thornton and Michael Beach are stone cold killers, but Fantasia and her reticence and cooperation with them was really disturbing to me. I don't know how you felt about this scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was also the same for me, I would say, because throughout the whole movie, it doesn't make sense for her reason just to stick with these guys in a way. It feels like she's somehow held hostage and she can't do anything about it. With also the first scene for me, it was somehow fast-paced and also somehow like too dramatic, and like I couldn't catch on because like just for them entering the house and like everything that happened was like going too fast. I couldn't.
It happens very quick. They move to a second location. There are even more kills. It's a whirlwind of actions.
There's one thing that directly came to my mind when I watched the first scene, but also during the whole movie, is that a lot of things happen off screen. Like, yes. There's not an introduction to some things. It's just like they're in the room, and then next they're on the they jump the things in between. Like there was another scene later on that had a similar feeling. So I was just like, I'm just interested if I'm the only person who sees it like this, or is it if it was a decision made by the director, like
to leave things out,
to leave
deliberately.
I mean, you know, it's not like it's probably what you said. It's a little fast paced in some portions of these scenes. Like there was not enough time to be that surprised actually, because it just happened, right? Mm-hmm. This whole thing happened, and the motivation is not really clear of all three of them, but it was obvious that, you know, they had some issues, some money and drug related issues and stuff like this.
Yeah.
And like you said, they were stone cold, so they didn't F around.
Yeah. So but to say. Yeah, definitely. It's this, you don't have this typical exposition talk that we are used to. There's no scene in which Billy Bob Thornton has with Fantasia a discussion like, oh no, you remember how we were supposed to be doing this? It was supposed to be like this and this and this. And then it happened like this. And now I'm telling you what my motivation for doing it actually was. Yeah. And my background about how I maybe am so addicted to drugs or so desperate for money to get to my kid that I'm willing to participate in this. No, we don't get any of that satisfaction. We are left in this opaque world where we are almost constantly shocked by the actions of people, because we aren't given the luxury of the whole background that made them take this road.
And that's a really interesting choice, in my opinion.
Yes.
Because it makes it really... it doesn't give you much to work with, so you're just looking forward to something or someone to explain something, or it just, you know, that enough time passes that you will understand what this is all about. But yeah, I like that actually about the movie.
Yeah. How did you feel about it, Paul?
I think the second time is when we have this introduction of these two cops from the city, and this is one of my cons, because I think later the character Dale want to be some of these cops.
Yes.
So, and I can't really relate how are the difference when I'm not living there. So, you know, so this two cops introduction is think too simple, or should be greater, because then I can may more feel this difference between him and these two cops.
Okay, so you would have wished for a more background on the two LA metropolitan cops. Yeah,
I would say with these three characters who've done these crimes, it's okay, but with these two cops, I think it's a problem.
Mm. Interesting, because to me they are very secondary, and I think I know I'm conjecturing, but to me, the decision to keep these cops almost like symbols of big city investigators is to mirror to Dale what kind of a loss of personality this kind of job would mean to him. He would basically have to give up his family, his background and all of it, and he would have to become the work.
It's like they are just cardboard cutouts for, you know, what a cop has.
They still are afforded much more than that, I think, with the few scenes we get out of them. Both exhibit a lot of depth, specifically what points out to me is a later scene between the wife of Dale Dixon and the white cop, in which it basically, in almost like a lyrical sense, they explore the conundrum that she is in not really wanting him to become a big city cop and basically risking his life. And the cop, basically echoing this sentiment or showing empathy towards this point of view. It's so well written and it's so very slow and removed that it really struck me as one of the best scenes of the film. She also has a fantastic line in it, which perfectly sort of encapsulates their relationship, I felt. Dale doesn't know any better. He watches TV. I read nonfiction. So, yeah. Well, you can't be heard.
Sorry. Yeah, I like that one.
Nice radio etiquette. But Noor, we've been gushing about certain elements of this film, but probably you disagree on some level because you weren't really captured by these characters. So maybe could you articulate for us what was lacking in these elements for you?
In the story, I don't know, but to be honest, I have watched many movies similar to this. That's why I feel there is nothing special about it.
Okay.
That's why. And maybe the idea that, as you mentioned, the difference between the police in LA and that city is totally shows the difference and how he's dealing with the community. He's not acting as a policeman.
Well, he is acting
like
as
mayor, I guess, right? It's more like he cares for everybody.
A civil servant.
I think ideally what we all want cops to be doing more, which is show empathy and be less of an enforcer and more of a communicator. But
I mean, I think the best scene to prove that was the one with this husband guy and his ex. I think
this
you know,
is basically
there,
the
there
only
were two
glimpse
ways
we
to
get.
Treat this. You know, right? Put him in a prison and then he will be back next week. Or, you know, talk to him and make him understand that what he did is wrong. And
This is what I mean.
Yeah, but did you like it? I mean, I think it makes him really like an interesting person who cares not only for his job, but...
Yeah, but when you know the rest of the story, you can see he's not a perfect person.
I know, but we didn't know that at that point, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was maybe obvious that something would come up. Not that much, actually, because I have to say I was really surprised by the.
My mouth dropped when I discovered.
Yeah, it was really good.
I also saw it. Like the moment we saw that she had a kid in Star City, I knew who the father was. But that's okay. I think that's very okay, and I think the movie actually doesn't really want to hide this from the viewer. It doesn't tell us, but it also isn't like shy about it and tries to really keep it from us. I actually love that facet of it. We are jumping around in the plot a lot, but currently, as far as our listeners are concerned, we are still in Los Angeles, and that's really not the case for most of the movie because we go to Star City, Arkansas. Arkansas is a state that's mostly associated with the hillbilly lifestyle. So it's not rednecks like in Texas. It's the hills and the remoteness of the area that sort of gives it its local sheen. And we are there introduced to the man we have spoken so much about already, Chief Dale Hurricane Dixon, which is a fun thing because immediately the movie plays with this title. He says, like, yeah, so basically the cops from LA arrive, and then when they discuss, I'm jumping a bit in front so I can share this little moment, which I really liked, where in the local diner, Dale is being greeted by someone as Hurricane, and he immediately says, I have no idea why they call me that. And everyone who's been watching him for the past few minutes immediately knows why he would be called Hurricane by pretty much everyone. He is so loud, so brash, so hard on his sleeve. You really have to be ready for it almost. It's a hurricane, I would say. How did you like Dale?
Before I knew everything, I liked that guy. Just like the way he was, like he, as you said, like as a policeman, he wasn't against the people, he was for the people. Especially like the scene.
Is he though? For every person?
For every person. He was more for like, so his, I wouldn't call it his people, the people he liked in a way, mm-hmm. you know, the people he tolerated. So like he was more for them, trying to help them. Like this scene where the two cops go with him to the other guy who's trying to break into his own house with his, I think, wife. Mm-hmm. And the wife is like, don't take him. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, yeah, he's just trying to help. But the other guys are like, you know, already like guns out. It shows like there's a total difference between him and the other LA cops and how like he handles stuff with his own community and like the whole county, basically.
Also based on experience, he knows this dude. The LA cops don't know this dude, so mm-hmm. they are immediately alarmed by the level of violence he displays. But he knows this is a guy who's probably all bark, no bite. He's going to destroy another window, but that's probably going to be the end of it, because as he then later reveals, he's pretty much there every second week doing the same kind of babysitting to this drunken man. But we are, again, not really following the plot structure here well, but it's okay because the movie actually also kind of tends to jump around wildly between different locations and parts of the plot.
Also, we have five people and that takes a while, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do want to get everyone's voices heard. So maybe instead of trying to adhere to the plot, we'll try to suss out the great moments or the not so great moments that we would like to highlight ourselves. I think we also have to talk more about the character of Fantasia, Cinder Williams, who was then married to Billy Bob Thornton also.
Damn.
Yeah, Billy Bob, he's, I think, had like five marriages or six.
Were they married when they made that movie?
Afterwards, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a bit of a head fuck.
It's shocking news.
It's a bit shocking, yeah. First of all, she has great style. She has a great outfit, which is pretty much almost like an emblem of the movie, which comes back again and again. She also is the most complex character next to Dale Dixon in this movie. We are, as I've mentioned, sort of continually perplexed by her participation and cooperation and active part in the extreme violence that these two display. So Billy Bob Thornton and Michael Beach, they met in prison, and Michael Beach is Pluto. He has a penchant for stabbing people. And Billy Bob Thornton's Ray is just, in typical Billy Bob Thornton fashion, one of the most despicable human beings you can imagine. Anytime he opens his mouth, you just really want to shut him up.
And like really short-tempered, yeah. guns blazing at the next best situation or whatever.
Exactly.
He's not likable, but no. He's intriguing.
Yes, he is always magnetic in the way he manages to make you hate him right away. And the movie has this fun structure, which actually I think diverts from the typical crime thriller structure, wherein we are always one step behind the investigation or hovering around the investigation. No, here we are given all the facts right away. We are in the point of view of the criminals more actually than we are in the minds of the enforcers. And so the structure that comes after that is that in very short fashion and in very economical, in a very economical way, we are, as the viewer, clued into how the LA Police Department actually pretty much solved the case right away. Because Fantasia left one child alive in the crime scene, she basically gives an opening to the cops to identify the perpetrators and to get this case already closed, in the sense that they have their suspects.
How did they find out? Did the kid tell them?
Yes.
He knew all the names or what?
Yeah, they were friends. Cinder Williams, Fantasia, she was let into the room only because they were intimately familiar.
The other, like the
yeah, Ray, and I think they that's again another part of this movie where we are not clued into all the facts.
Yeah, because they knew the name and they had the mugshot, of course, because they were in prison, but still, like, how
these
quickly
two, they were known criminals. And what I surmised from this not being told about it is that they were already connected to Fantasia. Fantasia is also known as a drug user before this moment, and so probably they were connected in some fashion before this crime occurred. And so, yeah, it's also, I really didn't care about it. I was really happy that the movie didn't spend too much time on this sort of clue-getting police work stuff, because the heart of this movie is lies very much somewhere else. It lies in Star City. Mm-hmm. Which was a really fun name for such a little sleepy town, because when I think Star City, I think like Russia, the big complex that they built to create the star spacefaring program there, which is a huge compound with millions of people living on it at the height of it. And no, this is just a really, really sleepy town with like a couple thousand people in it. And it's in Arkansas, of all places, which really we know as a place where not a lot is going on. And also where a lot of racism and a lot of hatred is still perpetrated. It's not the Deep South, and Jim Crow was not as long time held there as in other states. But it is of the more sort of quote-unquote liberal places.
I know this name Star City sounds familiar, and now I Google how. It is in Arrow. Is the city where Arrow plays is also Star City.
You mean the comic book character Arrow?
Yeah.
Okay. And how... Yeah, okay. Star City. Why would he be in Star City?
Yeah, I think in this case, Star City is a real city.
Yeah.
And not a small town.
Yeah, maybe. Of course.
So this is a contrast. So, but I think it's weird that it's the same name.
No, Star City is used a lot in the world.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So I think it's also a really general
mostly
name
for big stuff.
Or common name. So, so how would we call our city? A Star City?
Yeah, but it's barely a city, which really makes it funny, because it seems so aspirational and so big.
Yeah,
and
I just checked, I think 2020 was about 201...
places.
Yeah, no, people living in there.
Ah, people living in... God damn.
2,100. Sorry, what's...
Okay, that makes more
what's
sense.
What's wrong with me? Yeah, but I mean, still, it's not even a village.
It's nothing, really fascinating. But yeah, from this point on, what I was meant to say about the sort of plot structure is that we are now on the move, on the chase, and Dale Dixon only comes into the story because the LA cops immediately connect Billy Bob Thornton's and Fantasia's past to Star City. And so
there is a likeliness, a likelihood that they will be turning up there. And so this connection is made between the LA cops and between Star City, Arkansas's police department. But all the while, we have a wild chase, a sort of, people on the run scenario for the three of them. And therein lies a lot of stuff.
This is like one of the best scenes, or how to say, like scene after scene, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot that I really liked about this.
Tension play.
Yes, yes. First of all, I think, of course, the gas station mm-hmm. incident is really interesting and really tense, you know. I mean, do you want to explain or?
Sure. You'll go ahead, actually. Okay. I've been talking too much.
I mean, those fugitives, right? That's the word. Those three fugitives, they stop at the gas station and to eat and get some drinks or whatever. And then there's this cop. And it's really, you know, what's Billy Bob Thornton's person again? What's the name?
Ray Malcolm.
Yeah. Ray is really about to lose it, you know, yes. And struggles to keep his gun tucked inside.
Sweatily, he sort of immediately
opens up the jacket and everything, you know. Yeah. I really liked it that they put the focus on this opening thing, yes. actually, like this detail.
And it really makes you squirm, like, oh, please don't do it, man.
You also keep see your that, gun away. Which is also really interesting. You see that Pluto from the car outside has a perfect view at those two people.
Yeah, and he's basically doing the same thing I was doing.
Don't do it, man. And because this police guy, he's watching, right? He's really, you know, you don't know if he sees something in them, probably because they behave this way or because Ray is like really tense. I think he can sense it.
Yeah. And also the cop is just like the perfect NPC cop.
Yeah.
He seemed to be from an AI generation. Give me a roadside cop who just, flirts with the waitress and is basically the cock of the walk in his jurisdiction.
Also, like, what's the... I mean, he has not much to say and whatever, but they gave him this one line at the end, and I was like...
It's a really bad line. I mean, it's a good line to make him seem like an asshole, but it's because it really makes you cringe. Yeah.
It's because he's watching those two people, because in the end they can leave and everything is fine, but the gas station employee lady, whatever, asks him, you know, isn't she a little bit too young for you? And then this cop just says, like, I like him young.
Yep.
And that was
It's, I think, very much in the mood of this film, which is to give characters more nasty attributes than you are used to. It sort of never shies away from or also actively encourages you to see sort of the dark sides and a not so positive light for almost every character we meet. I really loved this stick up. I loved all those scenes with the three of them on the run. I think Fantasia is always a fascinating presence in these scenes, because as we progress on their route to Arkansas, you can see, or I at least could see more and more, why she was in a relationship with Ray, that this was not something that came about in the last week, that she was basically in a long-term drug foundational relationship with this man, and the drugs and the fun, quote unquote, which is very closely associated to the drugs, are her main objective here besides the money. And then it goes into how much charity are we willing to afford this character to say this was sort of a ploy all the way to get a better life for her son, maybe. But I think that would be very naive, because as much as we are afforded of the interior life of her, we do see that she is a troubled person and very much has a drug problem, which sort of dictates a large part of her actions, which is very tragic, I felt. I don't know about you.
I think so too. Just as you said before, it's like the movie tries to like show bad sides of like every character, not just like the good side, especially on Fantasia. Just like, you can't picture her as like this most innocent person, because not only is she an accomplice, but she also goes on for it to like commit murder as well, even though she was being dragged around. So yeah. She's not like as innocent as you would portray. Even though she's troubled, you can't just say she's troubled and give her the benefit of the doubt. She's also like, how do you say, a criminal.
Yeah, in charge of her own actions, mm-hmm. and the actions that she decides on are criminal and, yeah, really heinous in some fashion. Yeah, as you've alluded to in the cop encounter, the cop sort of doesn't let up. And when they leave the gas station, you feel like, okay, bop, bop, we got that solved. But no, he actually does recognize them and follows them. And we get this insight that actually, yeah, he's put two and two together. He's not this complete idiot that we had thought from the encounter in the gas station. He actually made the connection that they are looking for this trio of people and wants to confirm it. They don't get the confirmation, which is a little comfortable, is a little convenient for the movie to do it this way. But I get the idea behind it. So he pulls them over. Bad move. Really shouldn't pull over three people, which are probably armed and dangerous alone. But in true state trooper Rambo Rocky fashion, he throws caution to the wind and confronts the three of them. And we expect him to get shot right away by Ray, but no, he gets shot by Fantasia, which again manages to blend humor and shock and devastation in a very interesting fashion, because we still have Billy Bob Thornton, the blabbermouth, right next to her, and he's like, whoa, baby, what just happened? Basically cheering her on about this homicide. It was another interesting choice. And again, we have these very film noirish sort of shots of the side of the road a little bit removed, so we don't really see all the action happening when the shot happens. We only see really that Fantasia was the one shooting, but it all happens very quickly and we aren't really in the middle of what's happening there. But yeah, basically this is the escalation. After the escalation, we felt like, okay, they were in the deepest of shits. They had like six homicides on their bill already, and now they killed a cop. So yeah, we already know this cannot end well. All of America's police departments will now be keenly invested in catching these three. Yeah. But I really want to give some more voice to the opposition here. I really don't. I feel like we are praising this
movie,
too,
right?
Much.
It's not the opposition, but as you mentioned before, for me it was very direct.
Yeah.
Nothing to think about it.
Okay. So you also don't really have an additional thought on that. Like it's just, it wasn't really going above anything you had seen before.
No, maybe the idea that you can feel that there is racial discrimination.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's actually a very interesting facet of the film, I think.
Yes. Yes, and as we can say, the heroine of the movie, she's neither black, neither white. She can't find her place in both sides.
It's explicitly spelled out very late in mm-hmm. the film, but it is written all over the movie before that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And the level of violence, let's say, is high in that movie, yeah.
Well, it is very high in the beginning, but I think
even when she shoots the cops, you can see he hit her. I can't remember before she shoot the cops or after. He beats her, and that other guy just watching. So
I think Pluto and Ray are a really interesting dynamic too, because you never really quite get a grasp on how they were together in prison. Like first you feel like Ray is maybe more of the lead, and then you see the assuredness and the sort of aura that Michael Beach displays as Pluto, and you feel, okay, actually Ray is probably more of a subservient character to Michael Beach's character.
it's fascinating. They always kind of jockey for who's in charge, but at the same time, they're already afraid of each other too. At least Billy Bob Thornton is of Pluto. I don't know if Pluto is afraid of anything, actually. He has this steely outlook and this very calm and calculated way about him, which works.
He has 150 IQ. That's what they said, right?
Yeah, that's a very stale 90s trope to characterize a person as a cold-hearted operator. Oh, he has 150 IQ and but he can run circles around you mentally.
But it's really difficult to grasp him, especially his motives. Like, I never knew what like, if Cash. He's this intelligent guy and whatever, why does he, you know, work together? Why does he even do all of this?
He only loves one thing more than cash: stabbing people.
Exactly.
Yeah, he really loves stabbing people.
You know, maybe he could have been a politician or whatever, but the stabbing was just, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't.
He could have used his 150 intelligence to maybe stab have gave him more efficiently.
Like one of those knives that retract when you know. Just give it this to him, you know, and he plays
a couple ketchup packets for the effect.
Yeah. Yeah. And that knife is not professional. You can feel it's kitchen. No, fruit.
That's definitely like a butter knife, right?
Fruit knife. Yeah.
He likes to challenge himself with.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't want to go that easy. He could always get a machete.
Give me the least pointy thing and I would stab somebody with it, right?
Yes. He's tried chopsticks before.
No, but going back to this cop scene, what I really liked was the how long actually they gave this back and forth in the cars, you know?
Yes.
When he was tailing them. Because I felt that's actually quite interesting. You know, you have those scenes going next to each other, but everybody's separated by their own car. And just like, it was like really, I mean, they were driving really slow. And it took them because he had to get this information in, right? And I think it's back in the days, this was a little bit, you know, less efficient than it is nowadays. So this probably took them about 20 minutes, you know, just going in like, I don't know, 50 miles per hour or whatever.
It's so nerve-wracking. Like, imagine having a cop following you on a very slow-moving road all this time. Like, even if you didn't do anything, it would be so awful. And in this fashion, the three of them, they're really like scrambling, like, oh my god, he knows. No, he doesn't know. And it's again, it's a thing that we are familiar with as a trope in movies, but the way it's executed in this film is both masterful and giving a nod to people before him. You can really see Carl Franklin, the director. He's mentioned as such. I really think he's a fascinating figure in movie history, film history. He has a huge reverence for the old noir film era, and you can see him sort of plucking elements from this toolbox, but adding his own panache to it, almost like putting stickers on the tools that he is only uniquely capable of. And in this fashion, you give a great example, because as we follow them, we expect one thing to happen, and actually the even more nerve-wracking, even more suspense-inducing thing is to just stay with the moment and not be whisked along to the next sort of point of action. But we're losing a lot on the chase, and it is a great part of the film, a big part of the film, but there's so much more going on. Meanwhile, in Star City, we almost have like a little budding friendship between all those cops. You can see Dale Dixon, he is really, I have a little quote from Carl Franklin on this, because he is he looked for different actors, but he always had Bill Paxton in mind, and what he had to say on Bill Paxton and his energy was, if you ever met Bill Paxton, you know that what you saw was what you got. Bill was always a clear vessel. I just don't think he was capable of lying. He said what he felt, but even though I knew Bill was the guy, we still had to go through that dance. They wanted us to see Tim Robbins, which we've seen in The Player, and he turned us down. Jeff Daniels turned us down. All these various people turned us down. But I think they landed on the perfect person in this, optimism incarnate guy that is Bill Paxton, who I love in so many movies. In Titanic, he's great as the excavator. He is yeah, all over movie history, thanks to his collaborations with James Cameron.
Yeah, also because he was familiar to me, and then I realized why, because I just recently watched A Simple Plan, and they are both playing together, like Billy Bob Thornton and
A Simple Plan is very much in dialogue with this film, almost. Yeah. I feel
it's a really good movie.
It's a fantastic
Sam Raimi, right?
Yes, yeah. A very untypical Sam Raimi production. You can see, I think actually maybe Billy Bob Thornton is involved in that production in the background as well. Anyway, it's fantastic to have Bill Paxton in this kind of role, because the optimism and the almost idiot kind of glee that he expresses when the big city cops come to visit him is hilarious. He really plays it up for laughs, which makes the turn in the movie all the more devastating. You really want this guy to be a plushy figure, beacon of hope, a sort of representation of the small town living, that everything can be all right, that there's still people around without the hard edges, who just want to live their life as upstanding family people. But no, this is just the perfect setup to give you the shank in the side later on, because of course he has a dark past as well. And the way the movie handles this, I really enjoyed. I don't know about you, but what did you make of this sort of turn of Dale Dixon's past? We've alluded to it so much, so maybe Jibril, you alluded to it so much that maybe you can spell out for us what exactly Dale Dixon's past in Star City entails.
So to me, it was somehow surprising. Like the details that you guys say you saw, now that I'm actually recalling, I do see it. It's like he wasn't even a perfect person to begin with. But for me, I didn't shake that. I thought it was like a photo people somehow saw, until we reached the point where we discovered that that Fantasia's son that she left when she went in LA is actually his. And to me, it was like surprising. I was like, I didn't expect them that they had like this thing in the past. And the thing is, that Fantasia was underaged.
Yes.
So it was like, I wasn't sure if it's like, I didn't know how to cloak. I was like just surprised.
Yeah. The movie is really mean in that it doesn't give you that absolution. It doesn't spell out, Fantasia doesn't spell out like this was a wrong thing we did together or anything. It's very much open for interpretation how awful this encounter was for her. She doesn't give you any absolution as the audience in that situation. And so we are left, and based on Dale's reaction, you can also see like shame, remorse, and a lot of emotions on his face that you really didn't expect to see on this man's face when you first met him. And so it...
Sorry,
don't you hear it in the headphones?
It isn't turned up.
Okay, I see. Okay. Rami was again playing with the microphone.
I had to adjust some things,
it's,
right?
Yeah. It's some stuff we got to do.
Yeah.
Sorry to derail the situation, but the really dark underbelly of this movie is that the two of them have a child together, and that Dale completely abandoned any responsibility for this child, has never met him before. And it's really dark, the complications and the connections that you make after realizing this make you see Dale in a very different light. And it goes together with the theme of racism and the nonchalant way in which Dale uses the N-word to describe one of the cops in a barbecue they have together. Yeah, don't you recall?
Oh, I think I missed it, yeah.
It's a really sharp thing. He basically says it, and then his wife says, like, Dale, this is not nice.
Yeah,
he kicks him.
Yeah, he kicks him in the chin.
Okay, I remember that one, but I think I didn't understand what he was saying, like, acoustically. I didn't get it.
Yeah, he uses straight up N-word.
Because, okay, she also points to the African-American
It's very direct.
Okay.
Yeah. Carl Franklin discusses this a lot too, because it is something, of course, in modern day is reevaluated in some fashion. But I think it's a really bold and sensible choice, because the point of Star City, of Arkansas at that time, and of police in that time, is that there is no, like, trying to hide. Like, those two cops weren't like heroes to Dale, he wouldn't have a second thought about it, and really probably neither would his wife, because it's a status thing. And so, yeah, in connection with his latent racism, the way he sees or has seen his child out of wedlock as just a nuisance or something to ignore, really gives a sour taste to the character of Dale Dixon in the last minutes of the film. And the final confrontations that occur later on really are all informed by this sour taste in our mouth, or in my mouth, that I had when finally everything comes to a head. Because it does. The film doesn't give you the disappointing, they're caught midway between LA and Arkansas, somewhere in Texas. No, they actually make it there by actually making some smart choices, splitting up, not keeping to the pattern that they had before. And Fantasia arrives first, and she has a meeting, a little reunion with her child, which is sweet, but it's also very bitter, because you imagine, like, from the point of view of the child, from the point of view of the family who has to take care of the child while she's in LA, really also makes Fantasia all the more unlikable, and really paints an additional picture of her being, not the sort of the last remnants of us painting her as a victim sort of fade away, and you see both a possible motivation for her making this awful move, and at the same time a really straightforward way. All good?
Yes.
What's up?
Nothing.
Okay.
I was just about to remove something.
You were fiddling.
But
again.
I didn't.
You stopped yourself. That's nice.
No, but do you guys think that this last scene, or the end of the movie, is a way of redemption, in a sense? Right?
Yes.
Because
cinematic justice. Yeah.
I mean, it's also really hard that they just put him and his child next to each other in
this
last scene.
It's fucked up.
Like, what does it do to the child?
A lot.
Like the mental damage that he gets from this situation.
It's a genius move. I really think this final decision. So in the final confrontation, basically everyone gets shot. Fantasia dies tragically in a sort of unintended shot to the head by Ray. And everyone loses blood and is dying in this final confrontation. And as the cops arrive and try to give CPR, try to sort of help Dale, who's the only one who is still bleeding out and not already dead, they have the child with them in the car, because he witnessed where they went. And so the cops try to use her to find the place where Dale is holed up with Fantasia. And in this little last moment, the movie decides to have the child walk to the dying Dale Dixon, and they have the most tender and very well-written interaction, which is, the little pangs, the little parts of humanity that we are still afforded to Dale. and it makes it bittersweet and beautiful and also fucked up. I really liked it. How about you?
I wanted more from it. I wasn't going to forgive Dale that easy.
No.
Just like from just communication and stuff. I somehow wanted more, which is what I kind of liked from the movie. The fact that it doesn't give you like all that you want and mm-hmm. tells you all that you want to hear. It somehow like lets you somehow like decrypt it on your own, like realize it on your own, which I really liked. The last scene is like, it was very heartwarming, just like the conversation. It's like how like a father would talk to his son in a way.
Yes.
So they had like this warm encounter, but I feel like it was more of Dale trying to like almost like
absolve himself.
Yeah, get a like free his like guilt or like have like a conscious free, like have a guilty conscious.
Yeah, conscience free of guilt, maybe.
Yes.
But at the same time, I think the bitterness, bittersweetness, the melancholy emanating from Dale does sort of tell me, at least to a degree, that there is really no coming back. That mm-hmm. like this is a sweet thing that he is grateful to have a final encounter, but at the same time, an avalanche of repressed guilt and ignored emotions come over him, and he is unable to tackle them because he's dying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's so powerful, and the kid is just great. He's just so cute and so like, yeah, perfectly executed interaction between the two. I felt it really elevated the film for me. I'm not sure if you have any words on the finale.
I like the ending.
Hmm.
Yeah. As I said, it's like justice for everyone.
Mm.
Not everyone.
Harsh justice. Death.
Yeah.
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 I guess so.
Yes. But for the heroine, I think, if she will not die, there will be another movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. How but they will deal with the situation, yeah.
Yeah.
Because his her son is the same age of his daughter, I guess. It's almost, right? Yeah.
I think the son's a little... No, I'm not sure. I can't really read ages of children well.
Yeah, but no, it means that this happened the same...
Yeah, very similar time. Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
I was hoping that Dale survived because, not because of him, because of his family.
Mm.
Because this whole movie has so much characters and they are also ugly in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also why I don't feel tension really, because I don't like any one of them.
Really?
So there are
I really few, like ugly people, but that's just me.
There are a few people I sympathize with, so mm-hmm. Pluto, for example, and also Dale in some way.
Mm.
But I really wanted his family and his daughter and his
wife
has his dad. So this is why I think I hoped Dale would survive.
It's another mean choice in a mean movie. Like the movie never wants to give the audience the easy way out. There's no Hollywood tendency to soften the edges to give you, which is pretty much the mission statement from the beginning. Like, we get the full on, you better turn this off if you don't like awful things, because we're gonna give you 10 minutes of absolute horror show right away to basically scare you off of the movie if you don't want to be in this mood, which I think is fair. And it's a little radical, but also kind of, just self-assured.
Mm-hmm.
My take. So we are in the last minute, actually. It really went by fast this hour, but it makes sense. We were so many people. So if you got one last word, we still got time. Otherwise, I'm going to, I think, cut us off with the end credits theme song.
Watch the movie. That's all I could say.
Nice.
you can.
you can, you shouldn't maybe, because I was born.
No. I don't recommend it with someone else, yeah. Alone, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think there are maybe movies you could see instead of this movie, but if you watch it, it entertains you. So yes. I would say it's okay.
I think it's a good movie, and I'm happy I've watched it.
Very nice.
Thanks for the recommendation.
Yeah, I thank all of you for joining us on this huge round table, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.